so crazy. So just a few different thoughts over here, which I want to share with you. So it's not like not one long thought. The first thought over here is this is a piece from Shimshon Pinchas. So most people know that they have this whole set of Tiferes Shimshon from Shimshon Pinchas, which are a collection of his Shmuzin. But he actually published, but those were published posthumously. But he actually published Bechayev, a small sefer called Tiferes Torah. It's about that, like that thick. And one volume is al Chumash. Another volume actually is Lomdus. It's interesting, you know. It's not the Musar Torah. It's like Lomdus a Torah. Nice, you know. So the first, so he has a piece over here. He has two pieces in Parshas Chayesoro. One of them, I think, is a fascinating piece over here. So Eliezer comes and davens the Kashbrach Hakrein all the Fanai Hayon. So the Lashon of Hakrein is a very interesting Lashon, which is the Lashon of Mikra. Right? So the Rishon should make it occur. Like, you know, the Lashon of Mikra means it's something which just happens to happen. It's opposed to being ordained. I mean, the whole thing over here is that it's a tefillah for that it should be ordained. So why the Lashon of Hakrein, which is Lashon of seemingly it was haphazard that it happened, it was just an occurrence, is the wrong Lashon. And Bechlal, the Chazal, and you know the Rambam father Chazal, Rashi in the Parshas Bechukosai, when the Mekleis are called what happened to them, as opposed to seeing the Yad Hashem, they called it Mikra, the Rashi punishes them. The Rambam says that a person who, the Rambam was tiny, is when the merchant said the Peronius and the person's reaction, that's just a mikra, he doesn't do tshuva, he's an achzori, he's a cruel person. He's being cruel to himself and to the world around him by not responding, by doing tshuva. So the correct response is not mikra. So why does Eliezer use Lashon of Hakri and Lefahayyam? That's the question. Nir Levar as Lashon HaMikra. So I want to explain this word Mikra, which seems to be just that it's occurrence, it happened. Nehine Eitzarus Ksiv Vayikar Mikra Chelkas Hasod Leboyas. So over there it uses Lashon HaMikra also. It happened to be that she ended up in the field of Sod. It happened to be. I mean, this is the Bashert of the, this is the whole Osir of Klai Yisrael is built on the Hashkacha that Rus ends up in the field of Boyas. Boyas meets Rus, sees how tzniyish she is, etc., and is willing to then stand by her and marry her, and from that we have David HaMelech, we have Mashiach. And that just happened to happen, you know. Really? Like, L'char t'mur sh'nokar l'kosav l'oshan mikra, sh'kisha b'mais, is that totally kol asira sh'melech HaMashiach? Okay. But Basalim, it says Rus is Nikras Imish Malchus. It says that the pasuk in Malachim says that they there was the Imish Malchus. So who's the Imish Malchus referring to? It wasn't referring to David's mother. It was referring to David's great grandmother, which is Rus. She's referred to in the Torah as Imish Malchus. Hainu lechari ki kemar sh'am Yisrael. Yochalot is rock me arbi imos. There had to be imos in Klal Yisrael, and there were four imos in Klal Yisrael. Kain Malchus based David Mashiach Tzikeno Yotzer Rak Merus. She's the aim. She's the ima of Malchus and Mashiach. Im Kain Kasher Siva Kadosh Baruch Hu Shidam on the Soda Shalboyas Eich Mach Mechanim Zevulah Shem Mikra. That's not Mikra. This is foundational to the whole Bria. The same way we you know the Bereshim had in mind the Moshul. It says Behibar Ram that the Bereshim created the world Behibar Ram. So Chazal say that the words Behibar Ram is the same letter as Avraham. The Bereshim created the world for Avraham. It means this is put into the fiber of the Bria. It's not a Mikra. So the same thing that's true about Avraham is true about the Imos, and it's true about Rus. So you can't call what happens to Rus is Mikra. Okay. Well, the MS Ma'itz Messias Mikra. Let's explain what it means Mikra. For example, go ahead. In Nafal Olami Eitz, a leaf fell down, good time of year. Menachem Malka Mesuim and fell into certain spots. Karma is that Mikra? But Mazu Ashkocha, Mazu Mikra. What's the difference between Ashkocha and Mikra? Ashkocha Pirusha, Shayatza, Hakroza, B'Shamayim, Shalapani, Yipol, B'Makampani. Ashkocha means that it was decreed beforehand and that it happens. V'Hakroza, Hulechas, Me'erlam, La'ilam. V'Lechas, Me'malach, L'malach. Shamalachim, Hema, Madregas, Madregas. Acha Megiel, L'malach, Hakorib, La'ilamainu. V'Humachabin, Ha'ola, B'Makampani. Avashain Zuba Hashkocha, Elba Mikra, Hanashal Yotz Ayane Hachrosa, Venaf Malach, Oy Sorof, Oy Cholem Cholemus, Shayyadea, Shadarbazat Sorof Shayikra. Al Matthias Hateva, Mesaveva Shayikra Kach. But Umay Matthias Hateva, Shamiz Burk, Mahava Kolavayas, Hainu, Shemikra, who Uvda, Hamufel, Hayere Shamiz Burk, Loyere Malach, Loyere Sorof, Elkos Burk, Bechorabats. So he says an awesome thought process. He says, Ashkocha means it was preordained. Preordained, let's talk about Hishtalsos a little bit, right? The Moshe which the Bali side give in modern, the Moshe they give in modern terms is the following. So we have we get electricity comes into the building, it comes in, right, 110, 220, right, comes in 220 volts, 110 volts, etc. The power plant is producing it at megavolts, millions of volts. So you have the power plant which is producing this tremendous amount of energy. Then there are machines which their job is to step down the electricity, the lower the voltage to be able to send it on the high power the wires, which go still at a large amount of voltage. Then there are step downs to put it onto other wires which put it in a lower amount of voltage. And there are step downs to bring it into your house. Because it would come into your house at the megavolts, it would explode your house, right? It's not a good idea, right? So, there's step downs. So, in the world of how the Rosham runs the world, the Rosham creates, as it were, a energy source, a hashpo that he wants to put into the Bria. But when the Rosham creates it, he creates it at the primary level. That hashpo, if it comes into our world, it would blow the world to smithereens. It's too much a Kadosh Baruch Hu, as it were. So Bereshit has a step down. So what we refer to that as this process called Hishtalshelus. It moves from the higher level of the worlds to a lower level, to a lower level, to a lower level, till it's able to come into our world in a way that is fitting to the world that we live in. But it means that which we actually see taking place in our world on Chav Gimel Cheshvan, the decision in Shemayim and the process of bringing it down to this world, it took place before that. How long before that? Up for grabs. So now a person has a chaloyim. So a chaloyim, the neshama leaves the body. And it's not limited to see what you see in the physical world. So a person has a chalom memes, what he's actually seeing. He's seeing this decree, which is in a higher level, which we cannot see when we're in our body, because it's a different level of existence. It hasn't been stepped down into our world yet. But we're not limited like that during the time of a chalom. So a person can see in a chalom a decree which already exists, which has not made it to this world yet. So that's why we talk about in the Atavos Chaloyim, we see a Chaloyim which has something which seems to be negative. We talk about being Mehapech El Atayva. It's like we describe it as a Metzias, which we, and our Tila has to be to change it to good. I mean, it already exists. It's not just a dream. It's a reality which exists. That's what we're concerned, that what we've seen is not just part of the worst, that every Chaloyim has it a certain amount of the Rambam Tehillim. But if what we're seeing is something which is true, What we're really seeing is something which already exists at a higher level of existence. It just hasn't made itself down, hasn't been stepped down until it's able to fit into this world yet. And it's possible during the time when a person is out of the having his out-of-body experience called sleep, where the neshama is not bound to this world as much, that the neshama can actually see it. But it's a reality which has to be actually changed. It already exists. So that's when we talk about something comes bashkocha, means that there was, this was set into motion through a process which goes from Arlam to Arlam to Malach to Malach, till it comes to the Malach who's able to put it into reality over here. And that it's possible, therefore, to envision it along the way. That also means that the actual execution of it is done through this process. There's some way, in a certain sense, it's removed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this is... A lot of Kabbalah deals with this issue. A lot of Kabbalah deals with the process of the step-down process, how it works. And when you start understanding the step-down process, theoretically, there's manipulation, which is possible. That's what's known as practical Kabbalah, which is not advisable. Okay. Unless you know what you're doing, it's very dangerous. That's what is also the one of the main concerns about Kabbalah was when you talk about Olamos, means you're, as it were, you're describing a reality which seems to exist, as it were, independent of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he's putting it out through these things. It means these things have some element of so. The people who are misnaged to Liman HaKabbalah, what they were concerned is that if you immerse yourself into it, you start perceiving these things as having their own kayach. And that's the Avodah Zarah. So what's referred to, the Mara refers to as the person is Makatzitz Benetiyus. So if you picture a tree which has a trunk, and then it has very large branches, and off of that there's smaller branches, etc., etc., etc. So you finally get down to the end of the tree, at the outermost point of the tree. So it's all one reality. But if you start focusing in just on a branch and not seeing it as part of the trunk, that you've been makatz, it's been a teach, you've cut off this thing from what it's planted together. So that's what the danger was of this whole process, was seeing these things independent. Because if you understand them very well, you understand how they work, you understand how to manipulate them, as it were. So they start taking on their own reality, and that's very dangerous. So that was what the concern. That's one of the concerns about learning Kabbalah. So we're not, but we you know, a certain amount of Kabbalah sort of makes it into our reality of understanding. So that's how we understand Tashkach. What is Teva? He's saying Teva, we never make that mistake. Right, we have a different mistake, is we perceive Teva as being an independent. But that's but if you get past that mistake of Teva being independent, you know Teva is just a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Baruch Hashem at the Betchilas of Bria presented his ruts and how he wants the Bria to function. So that whatever quote unquote things had to happen to make that happen, the Rosh Hashem expressed his ruts, and that's what he wants, and he put the Bria into motion under those rules. Those rules are the Rosh Hashem's ruts. That's a direct action that he put in place of the Tchilas of Bria. So, in a certain sense, Teva is more direct than Hashkoch. That's what the plea that he's saying. Because it doesn't happen lo yirei malach, lo yirei sarav. Kadosh Baruch Hu does b'chadar v'atzmai. Okay? So hagdara hanachana shal mikra means davar shakar b'teva hanhaga shal Hashem yisbaruch hu shuv b'china shal kvaro v'atzmai. Okay? So now, when we're saying that the Baruch Hu put into the nature of the world that certain things have to happen, so this is part of teva. So that automatically is going to occur. So it's automatically going to occur. Well, it's just an occurrence because it's just like natural. Well, just like natural, Adarabba is the best way to see that it makes it clear that this is a direct divine intervention. Am I making sense? This is like it's a backwards thought process than we're used to. Right? That's what he's saying. Am I making sense?
No, not to me.
Okay, fine. Okay. You know, we right? You have with Mother Nature, right? Right? The lady with the, and she, you know, right? What was that? March or something like that, whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I can't fool Mother Nature. Yeah.
Right. Right. So let's get past that, okay? Let's throw her out. We're done with her, okay? Mother Nature's gone, okay? Right? When I say something is, let's go. Okay, let's talk a little Latin, right? What does translate the word nature, please?
Terra. Translate it.
English, please. Right? What is the root of the word nature? The Latin root of the word nature. Right? It's the same word as right? It's the root of it is nata, which means the as born, as how something is born, right? Nay, the person they were born with his name, like this is all right. It's all the nativity. I mean, all those through and how it's born. This is how it's born. This is the intrinsic reality of something. That's what the word nature means. Okay, so I say a person has certain mitzvahs in them, b'teva. That's not saying something bad. That's saying his nature is good or his nature is bad. We're describing the person's nature. So the same way we have a nature in a person. And we understand that means that something was intrinsic to him. We talk about nature in the Bria. We talk about the teva of the Bria. Means that's something intrinsic to the Bria. As opposed to something which is a divine intervention. Right? There's a fascinating Gemara. The Gemara says that one of these wild Gemaras, like the Gemara gives you an insight into backwards. The Gemara says that there was a mice once, there was the man, his wife died, and he had a young baby, and he wasn't able to afford to get a wet nurse, so the baby's going to die, and the Mishnah made an ace for him, and he grew the breast, and he was able to nurse his child. So the Gemara said, wow, he's such a kosher guy. And the Gemara said, no, it's so bad. The Mishnah had to change teva for him. It's bad. It's bad for him. Like the Kamagarua, this person, the Bershom had to go and change the world for him. Like, really? That Bershom made an ace for the guy. That's like wonderful. Like, why is that bad? What the Mor is saying is, the Morel says that what the Mor is saying is, the Bershom didn't want men to be able to nurse. If he wanted the men to be able to nurse, he would have made them to be able to nurse. So the Bershom's a rotzen for the Bria is that this is not the way it's supposed to be. So the Bershom decided, for these circumstances, to do this fellow a favor, etc. But that's not the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the way he would like it to be, really. Horaya, if you would like to be like that, we would see men walking around nursing. Right? I'm not getting involved in any feminism issues over here. Okay, but so the same way that's true, we say that that means nature is the greatest expression of the Bershom's Ratzon and how he wants the Bria to be. When I tell you the Ramavino was embedded in the Bria, that's a Milo. I mean, this is part of the nature of the world. This is the Teva of the world. The same way I say that it's, you know, this person, his nature is a very good person. He's born like that. That's what the word means. He's born like that. This is how he's created. So he came into the world like this. I mean, the Russia brought the world into existence in a certain way. So Teva is not negative. Teva is a beautiful way to look at the Bria and see what the Russia's Ratzon is. When Rus came to the Soda of Boyas, the Torah uses the word Mikra, means what happened was, this is something which is embedded in the nature of the Bria. The Russia didn't have to make a special decree to make this happen. This is already embedded into the reality of the Bria. That this is what's supposed to happen. So we refer to that as Mikra, in the sense of, it wasn't the Bershom made a special divine intervention. It just happened. What do you mean it just happened? It just happened because that was what's supposed to happen. That's automatic in the Bria. This wasn't something new put in later on. This is here, put in the engine from the beginning. So that's what he's saying. Mikra Batsim is the greatest expression of a direct Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because this is something which, when the Bershom set the world into motion, he said, this has to be like this. This is part of the way, as opposed to the Bershom later on, coming along and saying, you know what? Whatever reason, this is what I'm going to do now. So why is it important to say it like that? Now that's a nunakuda. If the Rosham, as it were, makes the announcement in Shemayim, this is what we're doing, and then it passes along, so someone says, ooh, I hear a Mashiach. I'm going to come and be Makatrik and say, the world doesn't deserve Mashiach. Mashiach doesn't deserve to be the one. Okay? Hine Rus, Megia Lasadabayas, Remi Zed, Yatsadab Melech, Melech Mashiach, Miyad Jabba Sad Makatrik, Bekol Kachel, Viyasa Kovashi, Yachol Kidalakit. So what Eliezer was asking, that what he wants, that this should be part of the intrinsic, what he was davening for, that I should be able to find right now the intrinsic reality of the bria of the person who's supposed to be the wife for Yitzchak. That's what the Eliezer is davening for.
Why does he have to daven for it as part of the bria?
That's a good question. It's too late for either as part of the bria.
Okay. Now, it's a good question. I don't have a good answer. Okay. I can give you a theory, which I can give you a theory on it, but I'd rather leave the question standing.
Okay.
Right. But I think it's a good question. But I think that you know, he's saying that there are moments where Teva doesn't always play out the way you want it to either. That there are things that are mock of it. So he was davening that what he's saying was that the Tfil Eliezer was that we should be tapping into the intrinsic reality of the Bria, which was supposed to happen. Let that happen now at this moment. Let this be the moment that's supposed to happen. I think it's a mind-boggling thought process of how to redefine how we look at nature. So, I mean, that's really like Gemara. That's the Gemara saying. The Gemara is saying the Gemara. The Gemara is saying that when I see a certain natural distinction between male and female, I'm really not being PC right now, right? Right? It's not this. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, like just the way it is. Like, no. Means that I'm supposed to sit there and really like learn that and understand that what I'm seeing is something which is embedded in the reality of the Bria, which means that's the greatest clarity of what the Bresham really wants for the Bria. The morale in the beginning of Ur Chodesh says that that we look at the story of Esther and it's all Teva. Because this was a nais which was embedded in the highest levels of the bria, and such a thing only comes to the world through tznius. In other words, if you make a big tirash about it, it doesn't fit into the world. So what he's saying, according to this, is adarab teva is the medrash says that the bresham is called umen mutzna. He's a hidden craftsman. Teva is the way for bresham to be the hidden craftsman. That's the tznius. That's the cloak of tznius the Russian puts on the bria. He makes it look so natural you don't even notice. But what was the story? Who said this mushroom? The Dublin market. I forget who it was. There once was a artisan who was tremendously good at his work, and he decided he's going to make a statue of the king, which will look lifelike. And he made the statue of the king, which was so lifelike that Mamash was perfect. And he expected, like afterwards, people would come to look at this, you know, wow, look what he did. And nobody looked at it. Like, nobody stopped. They put it in the middle of the square over there, and nobody stopped to look at the thing. So, like, he was like all like disappointed, like nobody gave him any recognition. Like, he made this gorgeous statue of the king, like perfect, etc. No reaction. So finally, like he confided in one of his friends, he says, "I'll tell you what the problem is. It looks so lifelike that people think it's the kid. It's just doesn't look like a statue. It looks like him himself." He says, "Go and take off the ear, and it'll look well. It can't be the king. King has an ear, and then they'll notice. Wow, the face looks so lifelike, but there's no ear. That must be it's a statue. And then they'll realize that it's not the real thing, right?" Teva is, it's so lifelike and so normal that it looks like just whatever. We don't get up and notice it. But really what it is, this is the greatest stature of the king. That's the greatest expression of Kadosh Baruch Hu in the Bria, is Teva. Not Nace. It's an awesome thought. Okay, thought number one. Okay. Digest that one, go to the next one. Okay. So beginning is, you know, I have to have a piece of Mefirsh, because, like, you know, I can't, it's not shy, I have to learn the parts of that piece of Mefirsh. Okay, so the first point he points over here, which is really not what I want to get into, is there's only Pesach Tanach where the age of a woman is recorded. Okay? I cannot say yay or nay, but
take his word for it.
The other ones are computed out, derived.
Right. Okay. Now, but what I want to focus on is that the pasuk says, "Zmeyoshana v'asim shana v'sheva shanim." Now, Chazal darshan it that when she was 7 years old, then she was 20 years old, then she was 100 years old. Just like when she was 7, she had a certain innocence, beautiful beauty to her, a certain the innocence and beauty of a young child, so that continued on throughout his life. But the pasuk on the pasuk is not like that. First you live 100 years, then you live another 20, then you live another 7 on top. So the 7 is referring to the last 7 years of a person's life, not the first 7 years of the person's life. Mm-hmm. Right. So why do we change it from Meyoshana Vesrim Shana to Sheva Shanim? Yeah, that's not the piece I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go back to this. Do the next piece first, and I'll go back to this piece from the El Moshe. So El Moshe is a Rishinerman who actually has a yeshiva up in New York. El Moshe Shinerman. He's a very good Baldarshan. The sefer is about 1,000 pages long. okay. So the Kliyark is like this. Mashinemer b'misper gadol shana shana loshen yachid meyo shana vesim shana misper katan shanim b'sheva shanim. So Zot HaKli Yaker, Lefisha, Chassidim, Alba Bisha, Kol Yemeyim, Shleimim, Chumachim, Yerseim, Kainim, Shleimim, Bishanim, Achreinim, Akarbim, Lashari, Mobis, Ibn Yomim, Hakaidmin. Okay. Why is that? Hemit Saad, Zitin, Zitin, Masivim, Chachim, as they get older, they get more Chachim. Hemit Saad, Shoz, Hem, Holchim, Niskarbim, Yerse, El, Aura, Nitzchi. They come closer to the moments of eternity. So the last 7 years of her life were the most productive years of her life. To the point where, compared to the last 7 years, the early years were just a shana, and this is shanim. It's many years. The last 7 years were, there was accomplishment of many years worth of life compared to the earlier years of the person's lifetime. Why? Because the Mor says zitzit min chachamim mishanedias zitzit min chachamim kol zman shemaskinim daitim miyushav azaleim. As they get older, everything that they've absorbed in their lifetime settles in better. And as they get older, they sort of are less and less drawn into the world, and more drawn into the world of Ruchnius. So the combination of those two things is quite a powerful thing.
You're saying it's not after 120, which is like a unit of a complete life?
No, I mean, just saying, I'm not sure he's getting that taking it that far. But she happened to live 127, so, you know, the Torah gives it in those units. I always found it fascinating thing. I have one explanation, which I think is a more simple explanation. But when I was in yeshiva, there's a sefer called Ayelet HaShachar. Ayelet HaShachar was written by a person named Ayel, Aleph Yud Lamed. I know who he was. Sefer is phenomenal. He used to use it in Lomdus, a lot of Masechtos and Shas, big Lomdus, etc. He's a Yeshiva somewhere in, you know, some Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Right? I get older, and all of a sudden, you know, about 15, 20 years ago, all of a sudden there's a person named Aaron Leib Steinman, a Yelis HaShachar. Right? Aaron Yehuda Leib. Ayan Alf Yudlamid. We didn't know his name. I'm telling you, in the 70s and 80s, we used the Sefer. We didn't even know his name. Like, he wasn't known Bechlau. Rav Shach, and the Steifel was alive, and then Rav Shach was alive, and Rav Aaron Leib was sitting and learning. The last 20 years of his life, all of a sudden he burst onto the scene and he's mamish, you know, the Managador, etc. So what happens? So, okay, the simple explanation is, you know, he was able to hide and not be leading when there was other people, and then when it came his time, etc. One explanation. Second explanation, there's a word for Rav Shalom Shadron. He says that the Chazal said that a person is running after COVID. COVID runs away from him. The person runs away from COVID. COVID runs after him. So we have one guy there, he's doing this. The COVID's going after him. He's running away. One person, the COVID's like this. He's running after COVID. So either way, you don't have any COVID. Like, you know, there's the race between him and the COVID. Either he says, "What's an afkamina?" He says, "An afkamina when you get old and you can't run anymore." So that's where Shalom said, right? You know, it's a very Shalom Shalom online. You know. So that's what happens. You know, this poor man in his whole life, he's running away from COVID. You know, Mele, he gets away from it. At one point, he doesn't run, he can't run anymore. So Mele caught up with him, right? That's the second explanation. But what he's saying now, the Kriyok is saying, there's a third explanation. There's a certain quality to those last years of a person's life that they're so powerful that it's a culmination of all of the years building up. That all these years building up, that means these last years can be tremendously powerful years. That he's able to really take the chrayas for a tremendous seabor because he has the power to do that. He didn't have the power to do that earlier. And if you had thrust him into that role earlier, he would have been stunted. But you waited to let him develop and develop and develop, and everything's absorbed and absorbed and absorbed. So now, when it came to his Zacharias, I once heard from an Adam Choshev, he says that America buries their Gedolim. That was the lesson that he used.
Buries?
Buries. He says, you take these people, we don't have any, you know, America, Lebanon has a problem. We don't have old, elderly Tamid HaChacham leading us, because we don't have them. So you have a few yechidim, which they can't. And you take the next generation, younger, and you put them in the role of being leaders. When had you been nice enough to let them sit and still develop for another 10 years, 20 years before they went into that role, they'd be coming into the role with a whole another level of existence. Once you're in that role of being mashpia outwards, it's hard to be absorbing inwards. Right? The moshav, what they say is that, you know, the Gemara says that when the kli is being maflet, it's not being boleya. When the kli is pouring out, it's not absorbing in. So the Gemara says on that, it says esnuim chachma, people have chachma. He says why? Because kol dibur shel adam loy laman aleph loy laman vav loy loy. When I'm talking, I'm not talking for myself. I'm talking for you. I know it already. When I'm talking to teach it to you. So while I'm teaching you, I'm not absorbing, I'm teaching. Right? So anytime I'm busy focusing outwards means I'm not absorbing inwards. As Snuim Chachma, the people which are not busy focusing outwards are able to be absorb all this Chachma and be busy growing. But there's a tkufa in a person's life where it's time to move on, and your responsibility is to focus outwards. When do we thrust it upon the person? You want to thrust it upon the person when he's allowed himself to develop as much as possible. The Chazon Ish sat in his little corner, and nobody knew who he was. Even when he published the Svarim were published Aleph Yud Shin of Ram Yishai. Nobody knew who he was. He didn't put his name on the Sefer, right? All of a sudden, you know, with the end of his last 15, 20 years of his life, he became the Gadol Hador. He was thrust into the position, and now we let him ripen before you put that responsibility upon him. So that's what you see. What's happening is that as you grow, there's so much. You have so much more absorbed. There's another piece of Hirsch in Parshas Noach. Actually, I think it is. When it describes the person, you know, it says, how old was he? Noach was Ben Chamesh Meir Shana. And he gave birth. So it says, Ben Chamesh Meir Shana. So what does the word Ben Chamesh Meir Shana mean? What does the word Ben mean?
Son.
So when he was the son of 500 years old, so how old are you? He says, he's a Ben Esrim. Right? He's not Ben Esrim, he's an Esrim. Right? The Torah always describes age with the word ben. So Hirsch writes that that's exactly what it's saying. They said this over Rosh Hashanah a few weeks ago, right? That the Torah is describing the word ben means you're a result of, you're a tolda, right? You're the father gives birth to a son. The son is the ben. The word ben is the root of the Hirsch. It says it's root of the word binyan. You're built from something. So a person is built of all the years that he lived. All the years that he lived have impressed something upon him, and you are the result of 20 years of life. You're the result of 50 years of life. You're the result of 100 years of life. That's what you are. You're not 100 years old. You're 100 years absorbed. That's what Ben Mayer means. So when a person has that much more that he's absorbed in his being, he has that much more to define who he is. So the Kli Yorker says that what we're saying over here is Badafka, that we're adding a whole new madrega of the last years of a person's life can be the most powerful, the most productive. What does America do? They make the person retire. Right? Because young blood. Really? You know? Now I'm the gay with over, but okay. I'm getting there, you know? There's a Ben Yaron in the Shari Tshuva, one place he writes, it says, you know, that he goes through in Shar Beis the six things which help a person think do Tshuva. So the person thinks of Yamam Avis, the person the Yamam Neroyim, the person has Yisurim. He says one of them is that a person starts getting old. So he says, so if an average person lives to be 7 years old, so when you hit 35, you're halfway through your lifetime. So if you're climbing a hill, it's been going up, now it's going down. So it makes sense. At that point and then onwards, the person realizes he's facing towards, he should start doing tshuva. It's a better year to write. So all 35-year-olds really should be doing a lot of tshuva. Right, so look at nowadays, people's lifespan is more than 70 usually. Okay, it's 80. So wait till he's 40, okay? But we don't see that happening. Somebody sent me an email, he said, I'm not quoting it perfectly. He says, one person out of the billions of people in the world will win the lottery. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks it's going to be him. Every person in the world is going to die, and nobody thinks it's going to be him. We don't think about Yom HaVis. It's just it's not going to happen to me. Rav Tatzel writes his Lashon, and he says that, there's people think there's sort of like there's a Chevra Starbers, there's a club called the Dyers, and I didn't buy membership in that club, so I don't think about it. And excuse me, but so we sort of the goal is eternal youth, but the wisdom of life experience and understanding and the Yish Vadas, etc. Our society is very strongly trying to reject it to some extent, and the Torah is saying, "Badafka, not like that." So that's the Kli Yorker. So he quotes the Dibre Chazal, Dibre Api Chazal, Sat Tzkinim, Zitmichom Chazman Shem Tzkinim, Daitam Yisheshav Esaleim. Brisa says, "Chokm Nitusef Es Behem." I told you once there's a drush of Iran, and Mishnah. So Pasha Taishir means as they get older, they get more settled in their wisdom. It says there are people in Nebuch that become senile, and Amaratzim sound minds, baseball scores all the way, right? Right? He has 90 years worth of baseball scores, he can tell you, right? So what does the Mishnah mean? So the Ran says a different pshat. I mean, it's not Pashup Shot, I think it's a very Chashup Shot. It's not the Pashup Shot, what he's saying over here. He says like this. He says, you know, a person's young, a person has tremendous vitality, there's a different path in front of him, and a person chooses the path of focusing on Torah Mitzvahs, a person chooses a path of trying to get ahead in this world. There's a different path a person can choose. It's not very clear which one is the best path. It's not really clear. And you can have a person who chooses path of Torah Mitzvahs and focusing on that and giving up some of the opportunities in this world, and he's going to wonder as he goes life, was it a good idea or not. There will be moments he wonders, is it a good idea or not. He says, but when he gets older and he looks back, he says, you know what, his decision that he made, the word Daiti means that there, his das means the decision that he made when he was younger. And he might have growth along the way, he says. He might, as he, during lifetime, he might be bones, but he says, you know, why did I do this? But when he hits old age, look back and say, you know what? I'm so happy I did that. The Zokan Amoritz, who chose a different path, not to follow that path. So when he's younger, he's quite happy with his decision. When he gets older, he's like, it starts banging on him. Why did I do that? I mean, I'll give you even a very crude story to it. My shir told me, I don't know, 20 years ago, like that he made a decision to send my you know his children to the Hebrew Academy, and that meant that, and he made a decision he's going to pay you know as much tuition as possible. So he had no money because every penny that he made was you know extra. It was all of his friends, and this is the 50s, like you know, like what was wrong with public school in those days? All of his friends sent their kids to public school, and they saved their money, and they you know they had big retirement funds, and they bought their houses in Potomac, you know, which then you know became worth a lot of money. You know, so you know, so while that was happening, it wasn't very clear like who made the right decision. He says, okay, it's now fast forward 50 years later. And once all they get together, you know, he gets together with some of his old friends who are still alive. And there's one topic which they don't talk about. They don't talk about grandchildren. Because most of these people, the grandchildren are going. So it's just like an unspoken rule. They don't want to talk about it. And my shver, in the dark side, you know, he looks at it and says, oh, his mishpacha, he's got, you know, he has X amount of B'nai Torah grandchildren, X amount of B'nai Torah great-grandchildren, you know, and, you know, it's just like, he's got a beautiful mishpacha. So the decision that you made back in the 1950s, which then it wasn't so clear that it's a great decision, and why it's good, and maybe you might have, you wonder, like, why am I doing this sometimes along the way? When you get older, you look back and say, the decision makes a lot of sense. It settles in. That was a smart decision. And the decision was, wow, you know, money, you're living it up, you know, be happy, you know, cruises, and that. You're pretty happy with it. As you get older, you're wondering, why did I do that? Right? So that's how the Ran touches the Mishnah over there. It's not just saying, discussing senility versus, you know, clarity, because both sides get hit with it. It's discussing, but he's not, but the Pasha touches the Mishnah, saying, the Mishnah saying there's a certain wisdom which Talmud Chacham gets, the older he gets, the more it just settles in. And that's fitting with what he wants to say. I mean, I saw my own Rosh Hashiva of Chaim. Like, you know, I don't know how he did it. I mean, you know. In the 70s, for sure, he wasn't, you know, holding a retirement. In the 70s, he was still, you know, there was, I remember one week, he, you know, he set a shiur in yeshiva, and he dealt with all the issues in yeshiva. Then he flew out to Los Angeles to fundraising. Then he flew to the next day to Chicago for a chasta, and then he flew the next day to New York for a chasta. And then he was 78 or something like that. You know, he was like flying all over. Reb Aaron Leib, he was like close to 90. He came to America and made that tour across America to Mechazik Torah in America. He went from city to city to city. Like, you know, he was in his 90s already. Like running around the world, you know, being Mechazik Torah. It's like, there was a Yid in Cleveland, his name was Moshe Helfand, Zichlev Racha. Moshe Helfand was the fundraiser for Tel's Yeshiva. Moshe Helfand has had two daughters, One of them is married to a person named Rebbe Hirschfeld, who was the very chash. That's the pasuk. That's the person I use in my pasuk. Other is married to a person named Getzel Fried, who is a walking encyclopedia of Kozo Akula. Right? Moshe Elfman was the fundraiser with El Zeshiva. That's a fundraiser. One of the Yulai told me, like, in terms of Sarif Chayyav, like, he wasn't really up driving, he couldn't see anybody else anymore. He used to go fundraising for Yeshiva. So he went with him. He was in his upper 70s. He went with the Moshe to Columbus, Ohio. He says, everybody was there for like 3 or 4 days. He davened by the earliest minyan, and he arranged appointments and meetings with people for 12 to 14 hours straight during the day. He went from person to person to person to person. He's raising money for yeshiva. And then at the end of the day, like, he came back to the hotel, they davened Maariv, and he sat down and he learned for 2 hours. Since I was a shmata, you know, I was like 25 years old, and I'm like, I was wiped out. But he's going strong. Right? You know, there's no retirement in the Torah world. You know, like this, it's a funny thing. My shirga said to my shirga, you know, this is I'm not going to let you retire. You know, what's this thing? Problem is, the government makes you retire. So my shirga's retirement was very geschmack. You know, he retired from the government. He finished the job on Friday, and Monday he started his new job. He went from being a patent examiner to being a patent attorney. I mean, you know, he had a law degree anyway, so it was just moved from one side of the desk to the other side. He just finished his last case about 6 months ago. He stopped. He said, "I can't do it. I can't give my clients the full full what they really deserve. So I can't do it anymore." He finished like the 6, 8, 10 months ago. And he finished like doing it, filing his last you know, brief for somebody. He's 90. I don't know, something, whatever. You know.
Wow.
Like. So what's he doing now? He's doing masechtas. You know. He made his first CMSHAS, first CM masechta. He was over 75. First time he paid a Siman Masechta in his life.
Wow.
He's already finished about, I think, eight Masechtas. Not Daf Yomi. He learns at Bein with different anaklavs. You know, he's going strong. Baruch Hashem, we are. So we got to strain society. We got to get out of this as of society. Now, so Hirsch goes with the way Chazal divided up, there's Me'er Shana, Esim Shana, Shever Shana. So let us take it then, page 379. Let us take it then, as is clearly presented to us, thus we are told, that not that Sarah lived 127 years, but 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. These three numbers represent to us the three periods in the development of human life: the age of childhood, mature youth, and completed old age. So it's beautiful, you know. In other words, if you look at 7 years old, is really, you know, you're not a little baby anymore. It's childhood. 20 year old is that you just, you know, you have the vigor of youth. You're in the vitality of the young, but you're mature already. And 100 is old age. You've completed old age. A spiritually and morally perfected life cannot be better expressed than as an old man, he was old, as a man, as a child. Okay. Fascinating thought. If you live each period of your life the way you're supposed to, you've used life the way you're supposed to. So when you're a child, you're a child. And when you're a mature youth, you're a mature youth. And when you're an old person, you're an old person. Each period has its strengths, has its purposes, and you use those out. The old person who tries to be a youth is unhealthy. The child who goes ahead of their time and tries to be an adult is also not healthy. A mature youth who understands that they still have a lot to learn because they're not old yet, that if they don't know that, it's unhealthy. Okay. More, our sage remark, one who truly lives takes the crowning special of each age into the next period. You don't lose what you've had until now. As it says in Boba Yamim, he comes home with his days. His days are not spent and done with. He takes all the spiritual moral acquisitions of his past days over with him into the coming days. Not allowed to be robbed by his years, rendering that it had been truly his. Sarah took the beauty of childhood with her into womanhood, and then of the 20-year-old girl with her into the grave. how far, and surely not to our advantage, does this point of view of our rabbi is conscious with that of our days? They look for beauty, but not in the 20-year-old, but in the child. And this is not in the child, but in the mature adolescence. Okay, I don't know what he's describing in his tkufa. Now it's like whatever. We don't look for period. We're not looking for innocence, period. But the beauty we're looking for, but it's a different, like, we're accustomed to speak of childish innocence. It would be sad if childhood were to be enviable because of his innocence, which that's what it is nowadays. I mean, it's not even enviable anymore, but innocence assumes the possibility of guilt. To be not guilty implies to have had a struggle against the pull of one's senses and passions to have conquered. But you're no longer innocent. If you had a fight and you won, you're no longer innocent. Only girl matured to womanhood and the boy matured to manhood can crown their head with a wreath of innocence. Innocence doesn't belong to the child or herself. It belongs to the mature youth, to the 20-year-old. I don't describe a child as innocent, because that's true, it's innocent in the sense of that there's never been exposure. But the true definition, the chiddush of innocence, is the person who's in, even in a state of maturity, has maintained his purity. That's where the chiddush is. Right? So, in the way Rav Hirsch is teaching it, he's saying that the beauty of the child went with her to the womanhood, the innocence of the 20-year-old went with her to the grave. Not the innocence of a child, the innocence of a 20-year-old. Right? So, I mean, it's interesting, like, it's a mukhra in the psukim, which way to apply it? No, but that he's just, you know, he's just pointing that out, that the Rosh Yeshiva of Pesach, this famous debate, like what's better? Is insularity better, or is exposure better? Right? The one argument is, being insular protects you. You don't have to expose all these negative things out there. It keeps you much more pure. The danger is, if a person, for whatever reason, leaves that miskeres and they're exposed,
they have no protection.
They have no protection. They don't know how to deal with it because they never dealt with it. Exposure helps you deal with it. On the other hand, you definitely diminish your purity. You've been exposed to things. So Shira Pesach wrote a piece on this, and it came out that each one has mildness. You can't argue one is better than the other. Both of them have mildness and have concerns. That being said, you know, we try and find a balance. You know, we don't say, listen, you know, I need to have my kids exposed to everything out there. This way, you know, they'll know what to do with everything. We don't want our kids exposed to everything out there. Like, why? You know, there's a Reb Shalom Shadron says over a Maisa that I can't remember the details of who told it to him. Somebody in England told him the Maisa, and he said it over. Reb Shalom would say it over, and the Reb Shalom said, told the person, it's Pasha, it's a mitzvah to me for us in this Maisa. The Maisa, there was a woman from a very, very firm background who had brain surgery. Now, during brain surgery, a lot of brain surgery is done, the patient is actually awake, local anesthetic, because of sometimes the danger of affecting things. They want to maintain the, see that they're not losing function. So there's no nerve, there's no pain cells in the brain. So you can cut at the brain and it doesn't hurt at all. It cuts they do local anesthetic to cut through the skull. And so, as long as the patient doesn't move, right, they hold them down, they can't move, they can cut into the brain without, they don't need the patient to be asleep to do it. It doesn't hurt. On the other hand, it maintains safety to know that they're not cutting somewhere, because they're able to monitor the actual function when the person's awake. Nowadays, they do it with, you know, with the computerized, but earlier on, they would actually have the patients awake more often. So, in the middle of this woman's surgery, so as they stimulate different parts of the brain with the probes, so you're awakening different memories, different things in the brain. This woman started singing Italian operas. This is a frum, very frum lady from Gateshead, who's never went to an opera in her lifetime, and she doesn't even know Italian, and she's singing Italian opera. And they're trying, like, what in the world is going on? And they finally realized, after thinking about it for a while, that when she was a little girl, she lived in a neighborhood which was a mixed neighborhood, and there's Italians and Jews. And the Italian people used to walk around singing opera. So she was 3 years old, and there's people in the neighborhood singing Italian opera. Her memory absorbed it, and they were able to awaken that memory in her brain. So everything you experience goes into your brain. As a matter of fact, once a passing article by Rabbi Kaplan, we suggest that the main function of the mind actually is not to get your memories, it's actually to block your memory. Filter. Because, you know, if I have 40 billion memories...
You can run out of space.
They would all flood my head all at the same time. I wouldn't be able to function.
Right.
So we ascribe priority to certain memories and other things not so important, and we filter. We wouldn't filter. I mean, you have these stories, these people in Nebuchadnezzar who didn't have filter, like these extraordinary minds, and they went crazy because they couldn't handle it. So it's all in there. It's all part of our reality. So everything you're exposed to becomes part of your reality. Now, if it's exposed multiple times, it becomes more of it becomes more cognizant of it. So do we want exposure? On the other hand, no exposure at all does make a person potentially vulnerable. You have to find the balance of how to deal with it. This Likud over here, he's saying that the Ben Estrim is the one who describes the innocence. And the beauty is the beauty of the child. There's a certain, so I would translate beauty over here. There's a certain chain that a child has. Like, you know, a young child, it's not just a beautiful, they're charming. Right? So the Baal HaMashava said, why are they charming? He says the neshama be'etzim is a very charming thing. The less chet you have in it, the more pure it is, the more charming it is. By the time you hit a certain age, you're not so charming anymore. There's a reason why you're not so charming anymore. Remendlitz has a line. He says, you know, this is when the boys come into seventh grade, they're so cute you could eat them. So by the time they turn 12th grade, you ask yourself, why didn't you? You know, there's somewhere along the way, teenage shows, like, you know, you're like, you know, saying, like, what happened to my child? You know, where'd he go? Somebody kidnapped him and put this teenage adolescent, whatever, in his bedroom instead. Right? So that's the challenge that we have. If a person can hold on to that, there's a certain purity. These people talk about, that charm is the charm of childhood. That's the beauty he's referring to. And the innocence is the innocence, you know, that the purity of that a young person who's in the flower of manhood or womanhood and still maintains their purity, that's the innocence that we're referring to. Okay, let's hold it here.